gossip is overrated anyway.
I hear that. Okay, let's begin. First of all, again, really, on a personal level, I want to give Hakaras HaTov for the chizik and the soros that you give me to see week in and week out young women this late at night after very long, hot days and a lot of effort put into taking care of your campers in all different ways. It's really a tremendous amount of chizik and soros as a Rebbe to see Talmidot, to see young women who want to learn Torah and end your day with Ruchnius and end your day with a deep connection to Hashem. And it's really inspiring and very, very beautiful. Okay, last week we studied the first Mishnah in Pirkei Avos after the prior week to that, going through Hakdama. So we're going to move on to the second Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. I gave out copies last week. I don't think I took them back. Don't worry. If you have the text in front of you, or you don't have the text in front of you, you all know this Mishnah by heart, or most of this Mishnah by heart, the core of this Mishnah by heart. This is probably, arguably, the most famous Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, possibly the most famous Mishnah in all of Mishnayos. And there's so much to be learned from it. And we're going to go through it and really analyze it and gain a lot of depth, because a lot of times in life, I think it's so important. And I think we mentioned this already, that certain ideas that we might have learned already and have a basic core foundation and understanding of, as we go through life, and we're growing in life, we have to revisit and understand those in a deeper way. And there's so much there to be gained. That maybe if I learned this Mishnah when I was in fifth grade, I hopefully could understand it at a much deeper level at this point in my life, and allow it to penetrate and to inspire me on a different level. So the Mishnah says, Parak Aleph, Mishnah Beis, Shimon HaTzadik was the Kohen Gadol after Ezra. He was of the remnants of the Anshei Knesset Gedolah. If you remember, the first Mishnah spoke about the Anshei Knesset Gedolah, which were the first ideas that were taught to us. That assembly of tzaddikim. So, Shimon HaTzaddik was of the remnants, of the final members, of the final tzaddikim that was part of the Anshei Knesset Gedolah, that tremendous assembly of tzaddikim that brought together Shimon Esrei and so many other tremendous ideas that we have in Klal Yisrael. So who are you, Omer? He said the following idea. This is what he wanted to leave us with. His legacy that he wanted to teach us, each and every one of us. Who are you, Omer? Al shlosha dvarim ha'olam omid. The world stands on three things. There are three pillars to the world. Al ha-Torah, v'al ha-avod, v'al gemes chasadim. When I was talking about each and every one of you knowing this Mishnah by heart, you're thinking, no, I really don't. What is it now that I read it without even translated it? You all know that you know this Mishnah. That there are three pillars of the world, the pillar of Torah, of learning Torah like we're doing right now, of studying Torah, of connecting to Torah, of living Torah, Avodah. Avodah could have been at one time Karbanos, but most explain Bizman Hazeh, Ezu Avodah Shebelev Zu Tefillah. Avodah is our davening, which is clearly a big pillar and foundation of what it is to be a Bas Torah, what it is to be a Ben Torah. V'al Gmelech Chasadim and Chesed. And these are the three pillars that really incorporate all aspects of our life and are fundamental. Three pillars of the world. Reb Chaim Volozhiner in Nefesh HaChaim, and as well in his Pirush and Pirkei Avos Ruach HaChaim, shares with us something very, very deep on one level, but it's really a simplistic understanding of this Mishnah. And he says, if these are the three pillars of the world, what happens when you have, if you could imagine a building or something that's on top of three pillars and you would remove one pillar, what would happen? The entire building would come crumbling down. It would all be destroyed. So too, Reb Chaim Volozhiner explains, these are the pillars of the world, meaning the world needs Torah, Tefillah, and Chesed to exist. And literally, if there was a moment in time without all three of these aspects, the world would cease to exist. There would be no world. And I know it's hard for us to imagine these ideas. It's hard for us to imagine what that means. None of us could imagine that at any moment the world could just poof and be gone. But if we really believe in the Ribbono Shel Olam, I believe in the powers of the Ribbono Shalom. The concepts of Ein Sof, there are no limits in the Ribbono Shalom. That's something really possible. I mean, hopefully it will never happen. But it's something very real. If you read Chazal and you go through Gemaras, there are Gemaras that talk about this. Specifically, by the way, by these three ideas. There's a very famous Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Peches, that says that literally, if we did not receive, if we did not accept the Torah, the world would have ceased to exist. The world would have just been gone. There's another Gemara, similar Gemara, in Tainis Daf Chav Zayin, that said without Karbanos, which is Avoda, even if Tefillah B'zman Hazeh, Tefillah is B'makom Karbanos. We know that Tefillah takes the place of Karbanos as our way of serving Hashem today. If there were no Karbanos, the world wouldn't exist. And famously, we know, as we say in Tehillim, Olam Chesed Yibane, the whole world was founded upon Chesed. The whole world was built upon Chesed. All of the entire creation of the world, but Hashem giving to this world. And therefore, clearly, our job on some level is to emulate Hashem and to give to others. So we see from these Gemaras, and we see from the words of the Nefesh HaChayim, that these are pillars of the world, literally. That if there was a moment in time, with no Torah, with no Tefillah, with no Chesed being done, literally the world would cease to exist. I deeply believe, and I'm sure many say this idea, although I've never seen it in writing, but I deeply believe that's why the Ribbono Shalom created the concept of time zones. You ever think about it? Why does there need to be time? Now, some of you might be familiar and know a little bit more than others of the orbits of the sun and the earth and how everything works a little bit. So we understand scientifically why there has to be time zones. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu created all of that. Time zones are like sometimes really annoying. Right? Those of you, I assume most of you in this room already, and some of you will, had the schus to learn in seminary in Eretz Yisrael. Or you will, and hopefully you'll all be zeichet to live in Eretz Yisrael. Hopefully we'll be zeichet to be a Mashiach, a Karov. But even before that, if we're not zeichet to Mashiach, we'll all be living in Eretz Yisrael. We have to think seriously. You know, today we dedicated in Camp Dina a day to Eretz Yisrael. I'll tell you women one thing. If I started talking about Eretz Yisrael, we'd be here for the next hour and it's late and we want to stay connected to pick up us maybe another time because I have a lot to say on the topic. But every single one of you should think seriously about living in Eretz Yisrael. That should be the default. If you're not going to we have this chus, it's our homeland. It's where everything we learn is about Eretz Yisrael. All of the history and the future of the Jewish nation is in Eretz Yisrael. Every tefillah we daven, v'lu shlayim yirecho, v'nei shlayim yirekodesh, every benching. Yet, I'll live in America. Like, why? Because that's where you were born? And if you were born in Uzbekistan, you stay there? I mean, I happened to meet a guy from there recently. That's what I'm just thinking. But Lamaisa, you don't have to live where you were born. Now again, I'm not saying it's, if you have very good reason to live in Chutz La'aretz and you have a good cheshbon, maybe. But you should think seriously about living in Eretz Yisrael. You should hope to live in Eretz Yisrael. Yearn to live in Eretz Yisrael. If we're not in Eretz Yisrael, we have to have very good reason why we're not in Eretz Yisrael. So there are times when you're in Eretz Yisrael, where do we go? Try to think back how we got there. When you're in Eretz Yisrael, so you're seven, most of the year, outside of a few weeks, you're 7 hours ahead. And that's sometimes really annoying. That's sometimes very hard because it's 10 o'clock in the morning and you need to speak to your mother about something important and you realize at your mother it's 3 o'clock in the morning and you can't call her. If you do, you're not a great daughter unless it's really, really important, right? So it could be very annoying and very hard. And for us, now you're here in America, you have friends in Eretz Yisrael, and you have a long day and you're busy and turn around by the time you want to call your friend, it's, I don't know, Chvesnish, it's 7 o'clock at night, and you realize it's 2 o'clock in the morning, you can't really call your friend anymore. So you hope tomorrow, but it happens again. So it could be really annoying. Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu? HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have made that the entire world is one time zone. HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have made that, just like right here, it's 12:23 a.m., okay, camp time, right, already different times. But let's just say in the world here in America, New York, in America you have different time zones as well. In New York, it's 12:23 a.m. Could have been that the whole Ganzvelt, the entire world, is 12:23 a.m. Why not? So I'll tell you what I deeply believe. Because then, there may be nights when it's, let's say, 3 o'clock in the morning, the whole world would be sleeping. And nobody would be learning Torah. And nobody would be davening. And nobody would be doing chesed. But now, with time zones, so it's 3 o'clock in the morning tonight in Camp Dina, and every single one of us might be sleeping. It's 10 o'clock in the morning in Eretz Yisrael, and there are people learning Torah, and there are people davening, and there are people doing acts of chesed, holding up the world. And we have to believe, each and every one of us, that any time I'm involved with one of these activities, which, by the way, if we stop and think about it, should probably cover most of our life. If I'm involved in any of these activities, by definition, I'm not just doing a mitzvah. I'm literally holding up the world. It's an incredible, incredible opportunity. Something very, very special. Let's talk about these for a little bit. You know, often in Yiddishkeit, we like to categorize things. It makes it sometimes much easier to understand and to learn. So we like to categorize the mitzvahs. Most often, we categorize the mitzvahs, I believe, in 2 separate categories. Various ways of 2 separate categories. Anyone could think of what ways that we could categorize the mitzvahs in 2 separate categories? Yeah? Okay, excellent. You could have that's very good for this week's parsha, which maybe we'll talk about after for a few moments. We have chukim, those mitzvahs that are mitzvahs that we don't understand the reason behind. The mishpatim are mitzvahs which can be logical, we can understand. Excellent. Yeah, how else? Excellent, right? We have our mitzvahs asim, mitzvahs lo say, positive mitzvahs, negative mitzvahs. Anything else? Yeah? Excellent. Those mitzvahs that have to do with interpersonal relationships, those mitzvahs which are us and Hashem. Beautiful. So there are these ways to categorize mitzvahs. So why have here, for some reason, Shimon HaTzadik felt we have to have 3 categories. Usually we have 2 categories. Let's take that last. Why couldn't we just set up the Mishnah in that way? And maybe if you wanted to give examples and the symbolism and the quintessential Ben Olam Akum and quintessential Ben Olam Akhlera. So say, Olam Omed Al Torah V'Al Chesed. Like, isn't Tefillah just another form? What is Torah? Torah is a way to get close to Hashem. And Tefillah is another form to get close to Hashem. I understand they're different. But like, we're not giving 613 foundations. So why not have 2 foundations? Why is Avodah so crucial? And why is it in the middle? Because by being in the middle, it tells me something very deep. I want to share it. Well, it's late, so I want to just give a little. You'll tell me after. I'll tell you something I want to suggest. If you think about it, Torah and Chesed, although in its perfect way of serving Hashem, should be with Kavana, with intent, to get close to Hashem, and should bring us close to Hashem, and help us connect Hashem. It itself, in its essence, doesn't necessarily. Meaning what? Let me explain. There are individuals who can learn Torah just purely out of intellectual pursuit. You could sit and study Bible, Talmud, Jewish philosophy. It's tremendous wisdom. I remember years ago, and I assume it's still going on, it was a big thing in the news, that in North Korea, in the public schools, and many were studying Talmud. It's part of their curriculum. Look it up. You could Google this. MS. In North Korea. South Korea or North Korea? Both.
North Korea.
I don't know if this is probably, now they're trying to mend with Trump, who knows. But anyways, Lemaisa, they studied. Why? Because they saw and understood, I don't know how it got to them initially, but there's tremendous wisdom. Listen, we don't understand that. It's the wisdom of God. It's infinite wisdom. It's incredible. So they felt it was important to develop their mind to learn this. There are non-Jews, there are non-from Jews that study Torah because it's an incredible intellectual pursuit. So of course, we study Torah not just as an intellectual pursuit, but an emotional pursuit and a spiritual pursuit, and helps us get close to Hashem. We see it as the words of Hashem. And as the Baal HaTanya says in Perek Dalet, every time I learn Torah, I'm literally hugging Hashem, which is awesome and so beautiful. Right now, we're hugging Hashem. That's awesome. Think about that. It's a beautiful idea. But Torah, in its essence, doesn't necessarily. If I don't have the proper kavanah and the feelings, it doesn't have to. Chesed, of course, as well. Aren't there many non-Jews that do tremendous acts of chesed? Aren't there many people that are involved in chesed not thinking about God? there can be many acts of chesed also for all the wrong reasons. People do acts of chesed for honor. People do acts of chesed to have their names on buildings. People do acts of chesed so that people can, in return, do chesed back for them. Fame, honor. So in its, of course, in its purest of ways, chesed should get us close to Hashem, should bring us close to Hashem, but in its essence, not necessarily. Tefillah, by definition, tefillah in its very essence, is bringing us close to Hashem, is a conversation with Hashem. And you're thinking, what do you mean? I could read words without kavanah? If you're reading words without kavanah, you're not davening. You're involved in Hebrew reading exercises. That's what you're involved in. If tomorrow morning you wake up for Shabbos and you're tired and you read through the Shemoneh Esrei and you're not thinking about Hashem and your mind was thinking about the game tonight against Mora Shah or thinking about the trip to Hershey Park tomorrow or whatever else your mind could be wandering that we don't need to speak about, Hashem Yerachim, but you're saying the words, you're not actually davening. In the pure halachic state, by the way, you should actually be repeating Shemoneh Esrei. We don't do that because we, halachically in our days, we assume we're on such a level that even the next time we won't have kavana and we'll be forever. So halachically you don't. But really, me'ikra adin, if you don't have kavana when you're davening, if you're not thinking about Hashem when you're davening, you're supposed to repeat that davening because you didn't daven. That's the real halacha. That's the proper halacha. Again, practically we don't do that in our days, but that's how it used to be and that's how it should be. Because that's not davening. As the Shlach HaKadosh says, tefillah b'li kavana, tefillah without kavana, k'guf b'li neshama. You know what that means? You know what a guf b'li neshama is? Body without a soul? 6 feet under. It's not alive. It's nothing. It's a physical presence. That's what a guf b'li, that's what tefillah b'li kavana is. It's Hebrew reading exercises. So tefillah, unlike chesed and Torah, in its very essence is connecting to us as Hashem. And that's why I believe Shimon HaTzadik said you have to create this new category of tefillah, of avodah. And it's in the middle. You know what's in the middle? It's the glue that brings everything together so that hopefully what through our davening I'm going to connect to Hashem, it will have ashbah and we'll learn Torah properly and do chesed properly, which also can and should bring us close to Hashem. Acts of chesed, we should be emulating Hashem. Be giving individuals the way Hashem is. And therefore, of course, being as close to Him because we're more God-like. The more we're like Him, the closer we could be to Him. And learning Torah, it's the wisdom of Hashem, it's the chachm of Hashem, it's the personality of Hashem. The more we get to know Him, the closer we can be to Him. If done properly, and tefillah, we're literally in conversation with Hashem. Of course we're building a relationship with Hashem. But I believe that's why the avodah tefillah is in the middle and why we need the category. Because that in its essence is connecting to Hashem. Let's try to think about that a little bit more every time we daven. And then have Ashbon every time I learn Torah, and every time I do an act of chesed, also be a pillar that helps us get closer to Hashem in this world. Why Gemilas Chasadim? Why is it called Gemilas Chasadim? You ever think about it? You've all learned this Mishnah before. I know that every one of you has learned this Mishnah before. I'm not going to go around asking and raise your hand. I'm telling you, I guarantee all of you have learned this Mishnah before. You ever stop and say, Al Torah, okay, Al Avodah, okay, avodah, why it's not called tefillah, but we said already in the Zman Beis Megdash, it's korbanos. Val gemilas chasadim? What do you mean? Val chasadim, val chesed. What does gemilas chasadim mean? So I saw Rav Avram Shor in this Lekach Valiv, this Perkei Avos that I have over here. He says a beautiful idea. He says, all of us, intrinsically, inherently, want to do chesed. It's part of what it is to be a human being. We have a need and a desire and a will to help others, to care for others. Every single one of us. But who of us is going to go above and beyond? Who of us is going to do the chesed which is uncalled for? Or I wouldn't say uncalled for, but it's abnormal. It's above nature. Who's going to do that level of chesed? Who's going to do that level of chesed? That's called Gemilas Chesed. That's what Rav Shor says. I was thinking about it, maybe, where's the root of what's Gemilas Chesed? The word Vayigmol in the Torah is the word used to wean. When a baby's nursing from a mother, so eventually, Vayigmol, you wean him off. Right? And have the baby start to eat other food and not nurse any longer. That's the word gamal, is to wean off. So to vayigmol means to change what you're accustomed to really go out of your comfort zone. The baby's comfort zone for a long time, for months, is to only nurse from a mother. And it's a process to get the baby to learn to be out of your comfort zone and not what you're accustomed to. That's what the root of it. So gemilas chesed is let's do chesed even out of our comfort zone, above what we're used to. I'll share with you a story. Have a question? Yeah.
How is that?
Here, we have to explain and understand what this gemilas chesed as opposed to chesed is. So I'm going to share with you a story. It's one of my favorite stories in the area of chesed. There's a book that I read many years ago. This goes back, I'd say, about 18 years ago, that changed my life in areas of chesed. There was a Rav you've all heard of, Rav Shlomo Karbach. Shlomo Karbach was the previous generation, the greatest songwriter that we knew of, but he was a tremendous tzaddik who was makariv thousands of people, literally thousands of people were brought back to Yiddishkeit because of him. And he was an incredible storyteller as well. He was a big Talmid Chacham, he learned in Lakewood. There's a book, if you want to read it, this book changed my life. There's a book called Holy Brother. Holy Brother is a book by Yita Halberstam. She wrote all those small miracle books also. And she wrote this book, Holy Brother. It's all stories about Rav Shlomo Karbach. This book literally changed my life. I'll tell you, it's an amazing story how I found this book the first time. But maybe we'll save that. We'll end up too long for another time. But one story in this book about Rav Shlomo will tell us what gemilas chesed is as opposed to chesed. It was early 1970s in Buffalo, New York. They were going to have a concert for Lag BaOmer. Lag BaOmer is a big time to have a concert because you haven't had music for a month. And they hired a singer by the name of Moshe Yes. Moshe Yes, you know a few of the songs he wrote. He was popular years ago. He wrote the song The Ninth Man on the Team, you know, with the Rebbe that played baseball with his Talmidim, and other songs. And he was hired to give this concert. About a week before the concert, something happened. Moshe Yes, I think he broke his leg. He wasn't able to go. And they were very down because they were excited to have this concert in Buffalo. So they're trying to find a musician to fill the void. They decide, even though he was like the biggest music star, Jewish music star of the time, they'll try Rav Shlomo to see if he's available. Happened to be he was supposed to be somewhere else, and that got canceled. He's available. He said, I'd love to come. How much are you paying? They were paying $700. Again, this is the early 1970s. Money was a little bit different back then. So Rav Shlomo says to them, listen, with all due respect, trust me, I'm not into money, I don't need money, but I'm like many months late on my rent, and when I give a concert, I usually get paid a few thousand dollars. Could you do any better? What's the story? So Reb Shlomo, I'm sorry, the guy, the president of the shul, says to Reb Shlomo, you know, listen, if you come, we'll probably get a ton of more people. Any profit we make is yours. We just want to have an inspirational concert, and I'm sure you'll be happy with it. And Reb Shlomo agreed. And he goes and he gives a concert. Rav Shlomo gave a concert. It wasn't like your 2-hour set concert with like your set two encore songs. He would go on for like 6-7 hours till 3 a.m, singing, dancing, giving stories. And kachave. At the end of the concert, everybody who came over were hugging him, thanking him. The president of the shul made the concert, came over. He said, thank you so much. It was incredible. He hands him a wad of cash, $2,700. Rav Shlomo says, amazing. Thank you so much. I could pay the rent I owe. This is awesome. Okay. 5 minutes later, as everyone's coming, this man comes over to him and says, Rav Shlomo, the night was incredible, so inspirational. Could you give me a bracha for Shalom Bayis? Rav Shlomo looks at him. My holy brother, what do you need a bracha for Shalom Bayis? What's wrong? He says, I'll tell you, until about a year ago, I had the happiest marriage. Everything was incredible. About a year ago, we became religious. We started keeping Shabbos. This Chabad family was Mashbia, influenced us, and Baruch Hashem, we started keeping Shabbos and kosher and everything. But because I started keeping Shabbos here in Buffalo, in the early 1970s in Buffalo, I lost my job. And it's been very hard finding Parnassa. And we've been struggling. And the lack of Parnassa, lack of finances, has really caused a lot of stress on our marriage. Could I have a bracha of Shalom Bayis? Shlaima gives him a big hug and says, I'm not going to give you a bracha. I'm going to help you out and do what I can, more so than a bracha. And he goes into his pocket. The $2,700 that he himself needed badly to pay his own rent, he didn't go and take. Imagine, he's meeting the guy for the first time, and if he gave $100, it would be incredible. Every single penny, $2,700, he hands over. He says, I think this could help you, hopefully. That's called Gemilas Chesed. You see, every one of us would do Chesed for such a person and reach into our pocket and give a $10 bill, maybe give a $100 bill. Gemilas Chesed is when you go above and beyond what's out of the norm, what's not part of the innate nature of a person. But you learn and you grow and become that person that all you want to do is give to others. Completely being mevatel, nullifying yourself to be there for others. To care for others more than you even care for yourself. That's what Gemilas Chesed is. And we mamish through these three acts of Torah, Avodah, Gemilas Chesed. We perfect, the Bnei Yisrael says, every aspect of our life. Meaning there are three aspects of a person's life in Sifrei Kabbalah and Sifrei Svarim Kedoshim, but even in the more revealed Svarim, we find this idea. You have Dibor, Machshava, and Meiser, our speech, our thought, and our action. Truth is, right at the beginning of Shulchan Aruch, it talks about these all needing to be pure. When we learn Torah, we're supposed to be speaking the words. It's very important. You should really try, even when you're learning alone, try to speak the words. You're using your Dibor in a holy way. Our davening, of course, is with our mouth as well. But as we said before, the ikar is our kavana, is our machshava, is our thought as we're davening. And chesed are our maisim. We're involved in Torah, Avodah, Gemilas Chesed, we're perfecting every aspect of our life. But I want to end with a tremendous idea. Tremendous idea on this Mishnah that I learned for the first time this week in the schus of everyone here. This is a Mishnah I've learned I don't know how many times in my life. Gemara says, "Eino doma misha pchona perko mea pamu mea vachad." You can't compare someone who learned something 100 times to 101 times. There's not, I don't know if there's much in my life that I've learned 100 or 101 times. It could be this Mishnah I've learned 100 or 101 times. This Mishnah, maybe. You know what, this Mishnah, I'll tell you though, many Svarim talk about how it's important to one to try their best to have certain parts of Torah, halavai, the more the better, but some Torah that you know by heart. And that way, wherever you are, you could always learn something. Let's say you're on a bus, you're on a train, you don't have anything else. Now in this day and age, Baruch Hashem, with technology, one of the highlights of technology, you open up your phone, you can find Torah 24/7. But okay, let's say your phone died. Or let's say it's Shabbos and you're walking, Shabbos Kodesh, and you're walking somewhere by yourself. You want to learn for a few. You want to utilize that time. If you know something by heart, you could learn that. This Mishnah is my go-to Mishnah, because I know it by heart, and I think most of us know it by heart. I don't think it's something so chashuv. Halavai, I wish I knew more by heart. But I saw a Torah this week. It was brought down in the Sefer from Abraham, I'm sure, from a Sefer Kerem Chemed, a gematria that literally I haven't stopped thinking about. Listen to this gematria. Mamish, I happen to love gematria and connect to gematria. So to see one that really blows me away takes a lot. It's not just stam. He says like this. If you take the gematria of Torah, Avodah, Gemilas Chesedim, those three things, Torah, Avodah, Gemilas Chesedim of this Mishnah, it's gematria 1309. Listen to what that's exactly the gematria, and you have to hear the explanation. It's exactly the gematria of the years that the Shechina was betachtodim. What do I mean, Shechina betachtodim? That Hashem was in this world. Hashem's always in this world, but in a deeper, real, present fashion, meaning the years of the Mishkan and the years of the two Batei Mikdashos. The Mishkan was in the world 479 years. The Rebbein Mechaya says that's what's called Mishkan Ha'edus. The Mishkan of Tess Ha'edus is Gematria 479. So Mishkan was 479. And the two Batei Mikdashos were 420 years and 410 years. If you add the years of the Mishkan, the years of the first Beis HaMikdash, years of the second Beis HaMikdash, 479 plus 420 plus 410, exactly 1309. Exactly Torah Avodah Gemilas Chesedim. So what does that mean? Why is that so? Okay, it's cool, but wonderful. What does that mean to me? It's mamish the biggest Torah in the world. Chevra, Nashim Tzidkanios. You know what this means? You know what it's trying to teach us? Yehalavai, we all yearn for Beis HaMikdash and Hashem's presence in our life. And a place we could go to where we really feel Hashem 24/7. And feel Him in the world, and we're davening every day. We're davening for Mashiach, and we want Him. And we want Beis HaMikdash, we want Mishkan. We want to feel Hashem's presence in this world always, in the sweetest of ways. But if the gematria for all the years Hashem was in the world is exactly the gematria Torah Vodim Chasadim, you know what it's trying to teach us in a very deep way? When I'm involved in Torah Avodah Gemil Chasadim, when I'm involved in learning Davening Chesed, I'm with Hashem in the same way. I'm mamish with the Shechina. That's the connection. The Shechina is b'tachtonim in this world during those 1,309 years. Exactly, gematria, these three avodas. So every time I learn Torah, every time I daven, every time I'm involved in Chesed, I'm literally back in Beis HaMikdash. I'm back with Hashem. We should be zoicha. These are the pillars of the world that are keeping the world standing. They should be the pillars of our life to keep our lives in the proper fashion connected to Hashem. And then they will also be the pillars that bring us back the Beis HaMikdash again with Gula Shleima b'mehera b'yameinu.